Beck. Vic throws, knocked up in the air, and it's intercepted. Kansas City off the turnover. Eric Berry's going to go the distance. Berry to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Kansas City.
Charles running to the right, bounces to the outside. Charles, he's got the angle. He's in. Touchdown, Kansas City. Jamal Charles, the ability to get to the perimeter and turn it upfield.
Those highlights courtesy of Westwood One and the broadcast last night that you heard right here on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Sandy Clef with you on a Bud Light Football Friday here on The Fan. Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the NFL. Here we go with our number two. Earlier on, Adam Meyer from RealMoneySports.com, 1-800-355-5883. And, of course, in this hour upcoming in studio during the final half of our program on this Football Friday morning, Dr. Rick Perea, sports psychologist, Metro State University of Colorado. We'll take a look at the Broncos through 2 weeks heading into the Oakland game on Monday night. And we'll also have a look at some of the college football action this weekend. Of course, we'll have Wyoming at Air Force starting at 7:45 tomorrow night right here on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. The Cowboys a slight favorite in that one. And it's Alabama and CSU with the Crimson Tide, number one in the country, favored by a mere 39.5 tomorrow at home against Colorado State. 303-228-1043, 295-88 in the Total Beverage text line, talking about whether the Kansas City Chiefs represent a threat to Denver's reign as two-time and presumably heavy favorites to make it three in a row this year's champions of the AFC West. We know the Chiefs are 3-0. We know that they have stopped beating themselves through these first 3 weeks, as they did consistently last year, when I think the turnover count for the entire year in Kansas City was 37. 37 turnovers made by the Chiefs. Last night, it seemed like the Eagles made about that many turnovers in the first half alone, allowing Kansas City to jump on out ahead 16-6 by halftime, hold on to win 26-16 in Philadelphia. The national story, of course, centers on the return of Andy Reid, the 14-year head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, fired at the end of last year, hooking on with Kansas City right here at the beginning of the season within the first month in 2013. He brings his new team, the Chiefs, back to Philadelphia and gets his revenge or vindication or validation, however you want to call it. That's the national story. Here locally this morning, the question is whether the Chiefs, in starting 3-0, represent a threat to the Broncos in the AFC West, and it seems to me to be a threat to unseat Denver's AFC West champions. You'd have to label Kansas City as more than just an up-and-coming team, but as a contending team for significant playoff honors, if not a Super Bowl title in 2013. The Broncos continue to be identified as more of a divisional favorite than any other team in any other division in all the National Football League, more of a playoff favorite, more of a lock to make the playoffs than any team in the National Football League. Does that 3-0 start by the Chiefs, though, give you pause? For the most part, the reaction on the phones and on the Total Beverage text line this morning has been no. Adam Meyer's point the first hour, yes, the Chiefs are 3-0. No, there is nothing in particular about what they've done so far that would threaten the Broncos. Somehow, I think our position on this has been misrepresented, so we need to clarify it perhaps a bit. This example from the Total Beverage text line. So if you're not a contender, that means you can't beat the Broncos. No, we're not saying that head-to-head the Chiefs can't beat the Broncos once anyway this year. What we are saying is that whether the Chiefs beat the Broncos head-to-head or not, they are or they aren't a threat to the Broncos within the AFC West. A threat to unseat a Bronco team that's won each of the last two AFC West division titles, backing into one in 2011 and running away with the division last year at 13-3. We continue on the phones with Fred. You're on the Fan with Sandy Clef. Good morning.
Hey, hi, Sandy. How you
hi.
Doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm okay. Yeah, I just want to let the people know out there And I think the Raiders' top-rated, a.k.a. running, rushing offense is a fluke when a third of that is from the running back, from the quarterback position.
Yeah.
And no, the Kansas City Chiefs are no threat whatsoever. I analyzed the last two games and seeing how they played and which they played. If those are players now, they get smoked. There's nothing else to it. So for right now, they're not ready to know how they played. And I keep telling people, Chip Kelly crap ain't going to work in the NFL. And I strongly believe that. There might be flashes and highlights of certain things outside of that. It's not going to work.
Well, I don't know. I think there's a distinction to be made between the offense working or not working and the defense being functional, the defense being competitive. And the point with the Eagles seems to be that while they do turn the ball over and certainly did on offense last night, the major weakness in Philadelphia is pretty basic, pretty fundamental. The Eagles can't tackle. They can't tackle. I mean, it still on some level comes down to blocking and tackling. Yes, there are other things involved, throwing the ball, running the ball, catching the ball. But basically, it's blocking and tackling still is pretty important fundamentals of the game. The Eagles do neither particularly well. I think the offense allows things to open up to an extent that they run up pretty impressive total yardage figures each and every week on offense, but they're somewhat mistake-prone. That's a result of perhaps some gaps in pass protection that result in Michael Vick having taken a real beating in each of the three games that the Eagles have played so far, even in the winning opening game on the first Monday night of the season against the Washington Redskins. He got hit a lot. That isn't really a good thing. But the worst thing about the Eagles is they can't stop anybody. They don't cover particularly well. They don't seem to be able to tackle at all, and there are all kinds of stats that demonstrate that through the first few games. And to Adam Meyer's point in the first hour and the point that some of you have made on the Total Beverage text line at 29588, about the Chiefs not showing a lot. Well, when the other team keeps handing you opportunity after opportunity, you don't have to look at Bo, for example, for a big play. Bo caught one pass last night for 4 yards. Adam made an observation in the first hour of the show today that was less than impressive. I agree, but you know, there's no reason for the Chiefs to take a lot of chances. And Smith is standing back there going 22 for 35, 273 yards last night. As long as he's not doing anything hideous or foolish, they're going to win that game. You wait for the other team to beat itself. The question is, how far do you go with that? Now, maybe a little further still with 4 of the next 5 Kansas City games at home. I believe the only road game is at Tennessee, and the home games, well, you've got the Giants, another team from an overrated NFC East, and you've got Cleveland, I think, in the mix, and a couple of other home games. So over the next 5 weeks or next 5 games with 4 out of 5 at home, not difficult to imagine that the Chiefs would be 6-2 or maybe even 7-1 at the halfway point of the season. 8-0 might be getting a little carried away, but at midseason, when the Broncos get to their bye week following their game here with Washington on October 27th, they are going to be, at least in terms of the record, they are going to be challenged, perhaps threatened by the Kansas City Chiefs. But coming out of the bye week, we find out, I think, about the Broncos and, yes, a little bit more about the Chiefs as we get into November. And Denver has that stretch, Kansas City does too, in which there is a lot of exchange within the division. The Broncos, coming out of the bye week, play 3 out of 4 games against the division opposition, twice against Kansas City. That's when we'll really find out. I don't discount the possibility that the Chiefs could win one of those 2 games against Denver. Denver swept the division last year, so that would be big news if somebody within the AFC West could knock Denver off. Head-to-head, I think that's possible. Knocking Denver from its perch atop the AFC West, I don't think that's as realistic. But your thoughts are welcome as we continue. Bottom of the hour, Dr. Rick Perea will join us as we continue on a Bud Light Football Friday on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. 10:19 on a Bud Light Football Friday. Sandy Clef with you on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan, 303-228-1043. Couple blinds open. Total Beverage text line 29588. Good text so far this morning. Our question centering on whether the Chiefs at 3-0 pose now a realistic threat to the Broncos within the confines of the AFC West. I'll give you an example from last year of what I'm talking about. A team that's obviously on the rise, but was not a threat within its own division. Although in the NFC West last year, the St. Louis Rams went 4-1-1, 2-1-1 against Seattle and San Francisco, both last year and so far this year. Apparently, two of the best 3, 4, 5 teams, if not the two best teams in all of the National Football League. The Rams last year, head-to-head against Seattle and San Francisco, again, went 2-1-1. They obviously were competitive and somewhat successful head-to-head against the Seahawks and the 49ers. Were they a threat within the division to either San Francisco or Seattle last year? Go back and look at the standings. You'll see that they weren't. It's the same kind of distinction I'm making right now, with, of course, the possibility of being proven wrong by events that might transpire over the last 14 weeks of the NFL season. Right now, officially, the Chiefs are in first place. The Broncos are in second place. The first time that the Broncos haven't had at least a share of first place in the AFC West for almost a year. And my question is, does that translate into Kansas City's now being positioned as a threat in the AFC West to unseat Denver at the top of the division? And obviously, the Chiefs, virtually by definition, would be a contender, a championship contender, perhaps on the fringes, perhaps one of the major contenders even, a top five team in the league rather than a top 10 or top 12 team in the league, if they're able to do that. I think labeling Kansas City at this point as a legitimate threat within the division would be going a little further than events warrant, than the evidence of their first three victories would take us. But if you have a different view or the same view, give us a call. Text us at 29588, 303-228-1043 on the phones. Martin, you're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan with Sandy Clef. Good morning.
Hey, Sandy.
Hi.
Yeah, Denver better not sleep on KC because they had a very talented roster last year, you know, and they addressed the coaching position, the quarterback and offensive line. So they're very much sleeping.
Yeah, I'm not going to go with you so much on the offensive line, but obviously, yes, the quarterback position has been upgraded substantially. I suspect you can say exactly the same thing about the head coaching position, and they had, as many as half a dozen Pro Bowlers last year defensively. They're a very talented defensive team, and that talent is translating so far this year. They were very dynamic last night, no question about it. Did a good job.
Well, they used the second overall pick on offensive lineman this year.
Right.
But, you know, everyone's been a little hard on Chip Kelly. You know, he inherited a really bad Eagles defense, and you hit it right on the head when you said they can't tackle.
Right.
But to say that he's failing right now, I mean, his offense is averaging 26 points a game, which in the league, you know,
he's not the head coach for offense. He's not the offensive coordinator. He's the head coach of the whole team. And when you become the head coach, and for the first time in the professional ranks with any kind of coaching responsibility, in his case, he's never been even an assistant pro coach. But as you're taking the responsibility that goes with being a head coach, you're responsible for everything, including the bad tackling, even the stuff you inherit. You are responsible for. And, you know, I understand after the first game against Washington, He was the most impressive coaching newcomer that we had seen come on into the NFL in maybe a generation. And now he's a bum. Now, not so much last night, in the previous game, he got caught late in the game having trouble managing the time late in the San Diego game, right? And there appeared to be a rule late in the game with which he was not familiar and acknowledged as much after the game, making it appear as if he had been completely outcoached and outmaneuvered by Mike McCoy, another rookie head coach, but a rookie head coach who has considerable NFL coaching experience. And last night, to say that Andy Reid didn't coach circles around Chip Kelly would be false. He did. Maybe understandably so. No, I'm not ready to go to the other end of the extreme and pronounce Chip Kelly a failure. You're right about that.
I can't defend his water bucket play, you know, for the point after. That was pretty pathetic. You know, that's a Pop Warner play that just will not work at the next level. But, I think, you know, you got to give him a couple years. You got to give him a couple drafts and see if he can turn that defense around. Because if he could turn that defense around, I think he's a pretty pretty smart offensive mind.
Well, the thing that comes out of all this, beyond the Eagles, beyond Chip Kelly, is how colossally overrated the NFC East has become.
Mm-hmm,
colossally overrated. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that not only by acclamation, perhaps the strongest division in pro football, but the toughest too, right?
Yeah.
Name a team in that division that can really stop anybody. Of the four, I guess Dallas, by process of elimination, is the best defensive team of the four because the Giants, the Redskins, and the Eagles can't stop anybody at this point.
I don't think any of them can.
Well, no. I said Dallas was so-so yesterday, and people jumped on me, and one of the points made was, well, they're the best defense in their division. Yeah, they're the best defense in a sorry lot within the confines of the NFC East. And that gets back to Wick's point yesterday when people were talking about the NFC being strong as a whole. I'd say, yeah, three out of the four divisions are reasonably strong. But the NFC East might be, on this Football Friday morning, September 20th, the worst division in the entire league. Not just the worst division in the NFC, maybe the worst division in the entire league. Certainly the most overrated. 1026, we'll continue with your phone calls and your texts. Dr. Rick Perea will join us momentarily in studio and stay with us right up until noon on a Bud Light Football Friday on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. And for the final half of our program on this Bud Light Football Friday here on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, Sandy Clef with you. You're home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. It is a pleasure to reintroduce someone who by now, after, what's it been, Dr. Perea, about 8 months, needs little or no introduction. Dr. Rick Perea, sports psychologist, Metro State, University of Colorado. Welcome, my friend. Good to see you again.
Thank you, Sandy. It's great to be here.
Now, I have to tease you.
Sure.
I know your outfit is otherwise labeled, but you do come to us on this Football Friday morning dressed in Raider Black.
Oh, boy. I hadn't thought of that.
I suspect that you hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
But I just thought, I mean, this is radio. I suppose I could have left it unmentioned.
Sure.
But we are all about honesty and everything being out in the open here. And
absolutely.
So, now, you don't have Raider labels on your outfit at all. It's something else.
And I can assure you I have no
Raider. But it is black.
No Raider affiliation other than having cousins and friends that live in the area. But, no, I'm wearing black just simply because it happens to be my warm-up suit that I'm wearing, Sandy.
All right. We'll start with this, and we'll weave back into some of the subjects we've addressed already this morning. But from your perspective, when you hear about the subject of rivalry in sports, whether rivalries are enhanced over time or diminished over time, and we get to Bronco Raider Week, in which there used to be little question, we're talking about threats to the Broncos within the division, it was always the Raiders, up until the last decade or so. Mm-hmm. And the Raiders have been one of the two or three worst teams in football for basically the last decade. So from a psychological perspective, as you look at Bronco and Raider Week, Has it completely changed? Has it gone away forever? Will we ever have that old feeling back when the Broncos and Raiders get together? What do you think?
I don't think we've lost it, to be quite honest with you. I think the Raiders, the fact that they're not as high of a performing team as they have been in the past, does not diminish that rivalry. You know, when you look at the Raiders, the uniform, you mentioned I'm wearing black today.
Yeah.
Colors have a symbolism to them. They really do. And when you look at that silver and black, all it takes, if you're a Bronco fan, is to reflect over the years, back into the late 70s, back into the 80s and the 90s, to look back at those teams that played really well and used to beat the Broncos on a regular
basis.
When
you saw black, you saw red.
Yes.
In effect.
Absolutely.
Angry. It activated you.
Yeah. Well, when you see that black and silver, you see their fans with the guys in the stands with the shoulder pads, with the spikes sticking out and the silver and all that symbolism that represents the rivalry. So I don't think it's really gone away. I think it's always still under the surface there in terms of them being two high-performing teams. But I'll tell you what, they come into Mile High. Oh, my gosh, I'm reflecting back. They come into, I was going to say Invesco. Boy, we better turn the page on that one. Into Sports Authority Field.
Yes.
They come into Sports Authority Field. I'll guarantee you John Fox is looking at them as a viable opponent. And you know, they really are. Depending on turnovers, depending on situations, they very well could come out of here with a victory. Is it probable? No, but they very well could. And in it, if you know rivalries, it, you know, the emotional part, the psychological part plays a bigger role than it would typically play in terms of X's and O's and personnel.
What did you make of John Fox's quotes this morning in Mark Kisla's column in the Denver Post about his rather preferring to dislike everybody in the division, but that's tough to do since his defensive coordinator from 2 years ago is now the head coach of the Raiders, and his offensive coordinator, not only for some time here in Denver, but back to his Carolina head coaching days, and Mike McCoy is now the head coach of the San Diego Chargers. It's hard to work up that same degree of hatred, even from a professional point of view. That's watered things down, that two of the head coaches in this division are former Bronco assistants, former Bronco coordinators from the not-so-distant past. It's taken away some of the edge to the rivalry, perhaps, that the Broncos don't hate the Raiders, and the Raiders don't hate the Broncos. Dennis Allen owes his head coaching opportunity, perhaps in many ways, to John Fox.
Right.
What do you think of that?
I think he's postulating propaganda, and let me tell you why. Because if anything...
He is not speaking the unvarnished truth,
no,
you say?
No, absolutely not. I say that he is absolutely illuminating a piece that's really opposite of what he's thinking. When you play against people that you've coached with, you are hyper-competitive. You are more competitive. You really want to beat them. See, those coaches that used to coach with him know more about his team, the Broncos, than other coaches do. So you're a little paranoid about that going in, about what do they know, what are our tendencies, what do we tend to do. Now, you have a different offensive coordinator. But if anything, those competitive juices are heightened when you play ex-coaches. So I think that's him just using the language and the ability to communicate to say, no, not necessarily, it's diminished, but in reality, it's heightened. And I'll guarantee you in practice all week in preparation for the Raiders that – there's been a heightened level of attention and focus that's been given to not only the game plan, but to the intensity level and the psychology of what it's going to take to beat the Raiders. Because I'll tell you this, the Raiders are coming in here with really nothing to lose. They're building, you know, they're the wolf climbing the hill. You know, the Broncos are kind of the wolf at the top of the hill. And when that wolf gets to the top of the hill, they relax a little bit. And I'll tell you what, the Raiders are climbing the hill, so I'd be very careful if I were John Fox and his staff, and I'm sure he's been warning them as such.
Okay, you're with our man Alfred Williams on that. Beware of the Raiders a little bit, in spite of the betting line that has Denver favored by, in some quarters, as many as 15 points. I wanted to point out the picture, you know, the old idea that the picture says more than any number of words that might be in a piece or a column in the paper. And this is below Kisla's column in the Post this morning on page 8B. I don't know if you've seen the picture. I'll give you a look at it. This is John Fox and Dennis Allen shaking hands after the first of the two games between the two teams last year. It seems to be, as I look at this picture, a bit of an awkward handshake. And from this picture, you can definitely tell which coach was on the winning side and which coach was on the losing side. Dennis Allen in particular doesn't look all that pleased or all that thrilled.
Right.
You can tell he just lost the ballgame.
Yeah.
So this idea that, you know, hey, it's friends getting together and winning and losing doesn't carry with it quite the same impact, that picture belies that notion.
Yeah, non-verbally, you can see Allen, he's very, very upset that they lost.
He's upset.
He's very upset. And so, again, illuminating the point that when coaches who used to coach together coach against each other, they take a great deal of personal pride in being able to out-execute that other person. I mean, from a cognitive perspective, it's a thinking man's game, and they put together the X's and O's and game plans. And essentially, it's kind of a social comparison piece because these were your coaches that you coached with, whether they were equal to you, they were coordinators or position coaches, whatever they are. There is a cognitive comparison in terms of your acumen and competency, and you want to come out on the top end. I'll guarantee every coach out there looks at every game as a competition between their ability to game plan versus the other coach's ability to game plan. So, again, I think that this competition is only illuminated on a higher level as opposed to what Fox said in terms of diminishing that competitive edge.
All right. What about the Kansas City Chiefs? You just characterized the Raiders as kind of a team climbing. What are the Kansas City Chiefs on this Friday morning, in your estimation?
Yeah, I think Kansas City looks really good. You know, we've always known last year they had pretty good personnel. On defense,
especially.
They have really good personnel. Don Terry Poe is a very good
one. He's come on.
He's a good, great one technique, very athletic one technique. I was watching him last night, and he has got great hands, great extension. He really has the ability to play that one technique the way it's designed to play. Obviously, they got very good linebackers. But what I like with this team is, you know, you always had, you know, Jamaal Charles is a very gifted running back. I mean, he's one of those quick twitch fiber athletes that can explode and be a difference maker with his speed and athleticism. But now they have a calming presence with the quarterback. You know, they didn't have that in the past. And now they have a calming, not necessarily a superstar back there,
right,
but someone that can manage the game, somebody who can balance what Andy Reid is trying to do. And I think that makes Kansas City very formidable.
You had a great observation before we sat down this morning as we were coming into the studio on Andy Reid. And I want you to share that when we continue. It's 10:43, Dr. Rick Perea in studio for the balance of our program this morning, all the way up until noon as we continue on a Bud Light Football Friday. Your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL continues to be Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Sandy Clough with you at 10:48 on a Bud Light Football Friday. Your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL is Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Dr. Rick Perea in studio with us. We're talking about the Kansas City Chiefs, a little bit about the Raiders, and obviously the Broncos and Raiders get together on Monday night. But we were talking about the game last night that pushed Kansas City all the way out to 3-0 to start the season. Very impressive start. We talked at the top of the show today about how through the history of the Super Bowl and the 47 previous Super Bowls, 66 of the 94 teams started 2-0, and there's never been a year, with the exception of 1987, which is a strike year, in which at least one of the Super Bowl teams didn't start 2-0. So there's real value, in getting back to your field, psychological perhaps. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're 2-0. We must be good. And with Kansas City now 3-0, the Chiefs have to be feeling very good about themselves. You talked about the explosiveness of Jamaal Charles, the steadying influence of the new quarterback, Alex Smith. What of Andy Reid? And you had a particular observation last night in a game in which the Chiefs pretty much had control right throughout, but you saw some examples of Andy Reid both as a settling figure on the sidelines, but in particular in the observation that you made, somebody who was not so settled.
Right.
With respect to Jamaal Charles at one point.
Yes.
Maybe his best player, at
right.
least on offense.
Right. You know, one of the things I do when I go watch football games, if I'm in person, I get a chance to really watch coaches' nonverbal communication on the sidelines, because that will give me a lot of information about the overall structure of and climate and culture of that team.
Yeah.
So last night I'm watching the Chiefs play the Eagles, and it was like a third and four, third and three, and you know they ran kind of a veer offense where Jamaal Charles got the ball and he fought through a few tacklers, but it looked like he could have dipped his shoulder and you know really fought for that last yard.
He came up short of the first down.
He came up short. He came off the field, and Andy Reid met him with a look that could burn a hole through a wall. And he verbally gave him a little bit of a tongue lash.
This is Andy Reid, who supposedly doesn't care a whit about the running game.
Well, I'll tell you what, he cared last night. And he was burning. And I'll tell you what, because he got into Charles a little bit. And what that tells me, though, Sandy, that I really love to see is that when a head coach takes upon a leadership role and deploys structure and discipline.
Yeah.
Football teams need structure and discipline. I mean, we may think that, you know, now with the new spread offenses, these are basically fast break football teams and the 3 yards in the cloud of dust is gone. But I'll tell you what, it's still a very physical and violent game. And I loved what I saw about him because he was holding him accountable. You may be our best offensive player, buddy, but you better dip your shoulder when it's time to get a yard and get a yard. And I love that. And the other thing I see with Andy Reid is he's a calming presence, too.
Yes.
You know, I mean, obviously his record speaks for itself, but you watch him on the sideline. And he doesn't get very emotional very often. So obviously what he did with Charles was something he really believed in. But you see other coaches. I mean, you look back to Haley. I mean, and some of those guys they had there, they wore their emotions on their sleeve. And that can be okay, but you're also a CEO. And you got to have that nonverbal leadership. You know, I've been on this show several times, and we talk about leadership from a lot of different perspectives. But what about that nonverbal leadership? I remember as a football player looking to my coaches to see how they were carrying themselves. Do they believe too? Do they believe we can stop people? Do they believe we can score? And there's that nonverbal message that coaches emanate from the way they stand, their facial expressions, their gestures, all those things mean something. And I'll tell you what, I'm not saying that I can read people's minds, but I can watch a coach on the sideline and give you a pretty good idea, non-verbally, Sandy, if that is an effective leader. And I think Andy Reid has those players buying into what he's selling. They're drinking his Kool-Aid. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm not here to say the Kansas City Chiefs are going 12-4. But I'll tell you what, they're a well-coached team, and they got a stabilizing quarterback. So I think they're an formidable opponent going forward.
Okay, to answer our question, we'll put you on the hot seat here, as it were, talking at the beginning of the show today and really about through the first 90 minutes about whether the Chiefs are just a nice up-and-coming team, as you in part just described, or they cross over that threshold and become a legitimate threat to Denver as a divisional championship possibility for this year. And then from there, as a playoff team, a contending team for championship honors.
Yeah.
You think they've crossed that threshold or about to cross that threshold or have no chance to cross that threshold, at least not this year? You said, let's not get carried away and say it's a 12-4 team. Denver probably is a 12-4
right.
team at minimum at this point. So
I agree.
It is not, again, to say that Kansas City, even if it's not a threat, couldn't beat Denver
right.
in one of the two games this year. But go beyond that for us a little bit and project on Kansas City as an authentic threat to Denver and a legitimate contender in a conference in which legitimate contending teams are few and far between, it would seem.
Yes. Well, I'll say this. When you have the kind of stable and pragmatic leadership that Kansas City has right now with Andy Reid, obviously his coordinators as well, the kind of offensive threat you have in Jamal Charles, the quarterback, and that defense, I think you really have a chance to be a legitimate threat. Now, I'm not here to say Kansas City is going to go deep into the playoffs or into the Super Bowl. I think that would be conjecture that would be, I think, way off base. Yeah. But what I can say is they're very well coached. You can see that.
You think he's a terrific coach.
Yeah.
Reid is one of those difference-making coaches,
yes.
particularly in his first year on a job after 14 years in Philadelphia. That, you know, as
yes.
you described last night, he is a vibrant, very visible, dynamic coaching figure at this point.
Well, and the other thing that I think he brings, Sandy, that's so powerful is an Andy Reid coach team is not going to turn the ball over
exactly.
on
it's
a regular
not gonna
basis.
Beat itself.
They're not going to beat themselves. They're going to make you beat them. And if you make teams make you beat them in the NFL and you have the defense that they have, you have the running game that they have, and the adequate, not proficient, not overly proficient, but adequate passing game.
Right.
I think it really gives them a chance. And then once you get into NFL games, Sandy, as you know, if you turn the ball over less, you're going to win the game 93% of the time. So as long as they're not turning the ball over, they're playing good field position. They got a great punter, okay? Field position is a huge thing. If you're working with short fields and you're a defense, you're in trouble. Andy Reid understands field position and how to manage a game from that perspective, doesn't turn the ball over, exudes verbal, nonverbal, pragmatic, structure and discipline and leadership in his organization. You're talking about a team that if I were a Kansas City fan, I'd be very excited. Now, let's not go overboard. Denver, I think right now, is a better team than them. There's no doubt about it. But again, there's many variables. One of your callers pointed out earlier today, there's a lot of variables involved in this game. People got to stay healthy.
Sure.
You know, Kansas City has to stay healthy. And so there's a lot of variables there. But again, I think they're a real up-and-coming team that has crossed that threshold, but not yet one of the top four or five teams.
We'll break here at the top of the hour, but your initial impressions of the effect of Clady's loss for the rest of the season on the Denver operations, specifically on the offense?
I think both the administration or the front office, if you will, the Broncos, and the players are doing a very good job at communicating that it's not going to be that big of a deal, that they're going to make adjustments.
Manning first and foremost yesterday at his press conference, and getting that across again.
Right. And I think they have to do that, and I understand why they have to do that. But I'll tell you what, a left tackle Pro Bowl player with his ability, his feet, I mean, let's be honest. It's not, you know, there's 6'6", 310-pound tackles out there. It's his athleticism feet that you can't replace. And I think Denver will miss that because they're going to have to use different offensive fronts, bring tight ends, chip with the running back, doing things like that that's going to take away some of their effectiveness in other sets in their offense.
And it might mean Wes Welker not playing as much as they would like him to play as part of those three wide receiver alignments. If they got two tight ends in the game, maybe it's Welker who can't play quite as much. And last week he was out there about two-thirds of the time, and that's about the floor for them. They don't want him playing any less than 66% of the time. We'll see if the absence of Clady changes that calculation at all. We have 1 hour ahead in studio throughout the next hour. Dr. Rick Perea on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. It's a Bud Light Football Friday in Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.